nigga.
Solid. Right on.
To the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. Good morning, Connor. How you doing?
I'm doing all right, Earl.
All right. You know, we've got a heck of a show lined up for you this morning. And before we get to it, I just want to make an announcement that we've got a great new segment that we are going to be adding to the Earl Ingram Show every Monday at 8 a.m. Not going to tell you exactly what it is, but I guarantee you, without question, going to be one of the best hours in radio, not anywhere in the state, but anywhere in the country. I'm so excited about this new segment. I've got a friend, you know, well-known, very famous friend, who is going to be joining me on these Monday mornings. And from 8 to 9 every Monday, and you'll be hearing promotions throughout these radio stations in the coming days as we ramp up. And what I think is, and I've been doing radio for a little while, probably one of the most exciting and funniest and tear-jerking hours of radio that I think I've ever done, that I know I've ever done. So anyway, you guys should get ready because we're going to test drive the Bentley. And I don't even know if we need to do any test driving because we really do work well together. And I love him from the depths of my heart. And so we're going to add this tremendous new. They'll be talking about it all over the state because there's nothing like it anywhere. So I want to thank... Number one, before we get started, Civic Media for having the forethought of making all of this happen. It could not happen without Civic Media. So really excited, as you can tell, about what we're getting ready to do every Monday, 8 a.m., to 9 a.m. on the Earl Ingram Show. With that having been said, I am awaiting my guest. It's the Honorable Judge Everett Mitchell. He's a candidate for the for the State Supreme Court. Judge Mitchell is the Dane County Circuit Court Judge. He's also the senior pastor of Christ, the Solid Rock Church in Madison. He's an adjunct professor at the University of Wisconsin-Madison Law School, co-creator of the Office of Youth Reengagement in Madison Metropolitan School District, and an all-around just really good man who has a life story that goes along with how he was able to overcome adversity in his life as a young boy. And so when you hear his story, and I always like to make sure that people hear his story, you will understand that, you know, life is tough and for many, and some can overcome it, others can't. But my guest and my friend, Judge, the Honorable Judge Everett Mitchell is on the line. Good morning to you, my friend. How you doing?
How you doing, man?
I'm always doing better when you are on the other end of the phone.
All right. Well, that makes me happy. Same here, man. Same here.
Yeah. So how's the campaign going, man? I mean, I know you know, how many pair of shoes have you worn out?
Well, yeah, I've worn out a lot of white shirts and... But no, I'm encouraged. Still doing a lot of positive things, meeting with a lot of voters, and still traveling the state. Connecting with so many people who are really engaged and really concerned about the Supreme Court and what justice and fairness needs to look like for our state. So it's been great to meet so many people and, to try to keep them encouraged that, not only will we be able to, accomplish this goal of justice, but we also can be able to make sure we have meet the needs of the future of our state.
I'm a busy guy, and my hair is all white. And I think I'm busy, but you can't take a break or take a vacation from what you do. I mean, you're Dane County Circuit Court judge to run. So how are you holding up, man? How do you make this happen? Traveling the state?
I think, fortunately a lot of stuff is in the evenings, weekends. So, as soon as I leave the bench, I'll go to events, and then, like, even on Sunday, do church and then hit the road and, may spend a day like I did this past weekend in Racine and engaging voters and dropping in on some organizers down there who are very engaged, some of our Latino organizers as well as, black churches and faith leaders.
The election, primary election day is February 21st, is just around the corner. This race is going to be more money spent in this race than any other state Supreme Court race in history. How are you holding up in that area?
Well, that is that's where we need to be able to raise money to get through the primary. And after the primary, you'll get, commitment from outside sources to be able to help you, make up the last 42 days. So, the goal is to, keep utilizing every dollar we have to try to make sure we get our voice out into so people can hear it. And then after that, start hitting the road even harder so that we can talk to more voters across our state and, make sure that we're not just hitting our partisanship groups, but also hitting those individuals who may just have questions about how I can represent them as the next Wisconsin Supreme Court justice.
On the line, Judge Everett Mitchell. He is a candidate for state Supreme Court. Judge Mitchell, not only are you a judge, but you're human too, and you see all these different issues impacting the state from your perspective. So many different things, but let's say as a parent, what do you see as one of the most critical issues that impact and affect families in the state right now?
Well, from my vantage point, what I'm saying is mental health. I think we are really at a tipping point for mental health crisis in our state, really because, whether you're in rural or, it used to be that you could be in the urban center and still have access to quality mental health. And if you're in rural, you may struggle to get, access to, treatment. But now both urban and rural are finding themselves in places where they can't get the treatment that they need to address, depression, anxiety, post-traumatic stress disorder, bipolar, schizophrenia, related diagnoses. And so I think I'm seeing just so much extreme mental health, both in our system, but also in the community, and trying to find the resources is a struggle. I think some places are, 3, 6, 9 months out from being able to even see a therapist for an initial evaluation, not alone, what they will need long term. So, mental health is at the top of that concern for so many people right now.
Judge Mitchell, I have a son that's bipolar and schizophrenic. I'm dealing exactly with what it is you are talking about. In this country, I mean, you're a judge. You see young people who come before you because you deal basically right now inside of, the children's division. People probably don't realize how many of those young people who come before you are dealing with mental illnesses. And yet, Can the court, some of the situations, the crimes are so heinous. Can the court take into consideration the fact that some of these young people have these mental illnesses?
Oh yeah, I think, you know, especially for in juveniles, you know.
Right.
I think in my drug court cases where I deal with adults and work with adults in that capacity, I think that's a little bit different because we're addressing substance use disorder. Plus, what we're trying to do is called a dual diagnosis. So rather than just addressing the, you know, substance use, you know, whether what do they use, we're also saying there is a dual diagnosis going on here. How do we make sure that we're addressing the dual diagnosis, which may be the underlying cause for the substance use? For juveniles, you know, we have all kinds of mechanisms where we're trying to address what's in the best interest of our young people. And a lot of times mental health is the character that is causing them to move in one direction criminally rather than trying to just focus on school. So, like, anxiety is a huge factor for a lot of young people. And we need to make sure that they have the services in place to help them manage that anxiety. So they can be able to actually sit in classrooms or, you know, follow the instructions of their teachers or process the pain that is motivating them in those moments.
You know, Judge Mitchell, the reason why I support you and love you so much and think that you're the and know you're the guy for that seat is because you have that background and you understand that. I mean, the background from the cases that you have set on and the fact that you realize it and talk about it. And we've got a governor that just pledged to invest, you know, millions and millions of dollars, tens of millions of dollars into a system that we've ignored for a long, long time. And yeah. And so, you know, we need to have you there. Because we live in a society that has ignored the mental health of far too many people in this state and in this country.
Yeah. I mean, just being able to call it trauma. Like, you know, when I first took the bench, just using the word trauma inside of a courtroom seemed kind of like foreign to a lot of people. And so I said, we need to start talking about that. What we're seeing in front of us is trauma, and relating the trauma to the young people and the families that were coming in front of our court. So, you know, the trauma of abuse or undiagnosed, untreated mental health, or just all of the abuse and pain and the violence that they've seen.
So, Judge Mitchell, all right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. On the line, the Honorable Judge Everett Mitchell, who is a candidate for the state Supreme Court. You know, Judge Mitchell, let's say, because many of us don't know the inner workings on how, you know, cases are determined on the Supreme Court level, what cases the judges decide they want to hear. Give us a little background on how that works.
At the Supreme Court level, once somebody it reaches the level where they're asking the court to review a particular case or statute, it only takes three justices for them to accept the case. And so once those justices accept the case, then, you know, it gets on the schedule for them to then move forward with, you know, briefing and scheduling so that that case will then be, you know, particularly heard before the court. And, you know, the courts will decide whether or not to have a full hearing or, you know, just to make the decision on briefs or not issue anything at all. So, but it only takes three to accept.
So they get thousands and thousands of requests. I mean, what is it that makes them say, well, this is the one?
In general, you know, you just, like I said, you just need three people that may say that this is an important issue to take up. And, you know, then they will start reading to decide for among all seven, you know, whether or not they need to move toward a particular decision on an issue. So,
okay, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, so I was just saying that that's what is it's not a particular formula. Obviously, they want to handle bigger questions and not, you know, smaller questions that circuit courts and appellate courts can address. But generally, courts want to make sure that there's a consistent ruling. So if there's some different types of ruling that happening in the appellate courts and they're giving divergent decisions, the Supreme Court, you know, the state Supreme Court is helping to resolve that. Or if there are critical issues like during the pandemic, we saw a lot of cases that were brought before the Supreme Court that normally will be handled in the legislature or the executive branch, you know, like mask mandates and, you know, extension of mask mandates, all of those ended up in the Supreme Court primarily because they were trying to get some kind of resolution that the executive and legislature could not resolve.
So help us understand, because those of us who've been around a little while have always heard that the Supreme Courts, whether on the state or United States Supreme Court, don't have any biases. You know, you may be considered a liberal leaning person, and you know, it's a couple of the other people I considered, you know, leaning more to the right. The founding fathers and all of this, I think, did not want that part of it. Can you not be one of those things? I mean, you got to, you know.
Yeah, I mean, Mr. Englund, the biggest struggle that people see is that when people, you know, especially in the media, kind of cast the conversation and this is a conservative or this is
right, liberal.
And they do that in such a way because, you know, it polarizes people.
Right.
But when you're a judge, I don't think I have ever asked not one person who comes before me whether or not they are a Republican or a Democrat or Green Party or Independent. That's never a conversation. You know, so what is most important is that what is in front of me, what do I need to see, what can we do together, what is the case, what are the facts, because that is what matters the most. Can somebody rule based upon the facts that are in front of them and not allow for some outside influence to dictate, you know, what you see in that particular case?
Well, you know,
like I've said in the forum, any judge, no matter at what level he or she may find themselves, should preside over cases for which outside influences are dictating how you are interpreting the law.
So at the United States Supreme Court level, we saw a decision made that put money right into the middle of everything that happens in this country and has been devastating to the outcomes of many activities that happened in this country. And yet it was a conservative-leaning court that did that. I know it's not supposed to be that, Judge Mitchell, but
yes.
It's just not reality.
No, it's not. And I think that is why so many people look at courts, and I think I was reading in a CNN poll, you know, like the respect that they have of courts is like 29%, some of the lowest that they've ever seen before, because it's completely, I mean, it's so blatantly partisan right now. And even though it, you know, these decisions are being made, people know that they're being made based on partisanship, and they're not really based on how people are interpreting the rule of law. And so, you know, and we will have some more cases that are going to come down this next June that could just be just as catastrophic in terms of our foundational understanding of law. We're going, you know, they're looking at affirmative action. They're looking
yes.
at the Indian Child Welfare Act again. They're paying attention to this independent state legislature theory that is probably one of the more dangerous, I think, decisions that could come down and really impact how, you know, state legislatures then have power to decide voting and elections in their state, and then their state Supreme Courts don't have the power to oversee or interject in those decisions.
So
it is, yes.
No, go ahead.
No, I was just saying that those kind of cases, Mr. Ingram, are the kinds of cases where we're going to see our landscape, legal landscape, being reshaped over and over again right before us.
All right, we've got to go to a short break. On the line, just a wonderful, wonderful person and great judge, Judge Everett Mitchell. He is a candidate for the state Supreme Court. We'll be right back. To the Earl Ingram Show, as always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. My guest is the Honorable Judge Everett Mitchell. He's a candidate for the state Supreme Court. You know, Judge Mitchell, I am clearly a person who is in support of you. There's no question whatsoever, and I don't have to hide that. And it's not because you're a black man. It's not because, you know, you're a liberal. It's because I've listened to you. I've weighed the way you look at things, and you clearly have an understanding of things from the perspective of a person who has not, you know, been blessed with a silver spoon in your mouth. You have lived the life that many have and been able to overcome issues in your life. And I think that kind of matters when we're talking about people in a society that sometimes fails to understand that all people should be looked at the same. And the fact that whatever your circumstances are should not come into play when it comes time for making decisions that impact and affect us all.
Yeah, I appreciate you saying that, you know, because that is what I've always thought about, is that, you know, one, if you make it, you know, the path to becoming a judge is so small, right? It's so narrow. And then when you get there, how do you use your life experiences to help shape the ways in which you want to run a courtroom? And, you know, Mr. Ingram, when you have been to the bottom, you know, I know what it's like, you know, to be homeless and, you know, trauma and hospitals and you know, not having, you know, resources and knowing what it's like to be ashamed because you don't have a father on Father's Day. You know, I can't tell you how many times I cried as a young man, you know, struggling because I didn't have a father on Father's Day to send, you know, information to, or, you know, being in college at Morehouse, you know, when all of the family, you know, the families would come in with the other students who had money to do so, and I would sit in the King's Chapel because I didn't have, you know, my family couldn't afford to come. You know, nobody could afford to come visit me in Georgia, so I stayed most of the time by myself. Those kind of things, you know, being homeless as a senior at Morehouse, and, you know, sleeping on a floor before I graduated, those things build character. And it's not a place to, you know, for people to feel sorry for you, but it builds a sense of empathy when you see individuals before you who are struggling with those same kinds of rotations of moments in their life. And you can give them, you know, a clear pathway to focus. So for the young people, they know Judge Mitchell is going to stress education, because I want them to have as many options as possible. I used to give them this example that y'all can have I call it my option sandwich. You know, I tell them either you can have a sandwich with just no, you know, a pile of poop on it and a sandwich and you got to take it, or you can have one with some four course meals, with an appetizer, with a nice dessert, with a main course meal, with, you know, nice dessert wine, all that good stuff. And that's how you want to live life. But you can't do that without your education.
So let me, you know, you clearly, in all your studies, ran across a man named Thurgood Marshall.
Yeah.
And here was a man who, at that point in time, rose the first black United States Supreme Court justice. Can you imagine during those times that he was able to overcome that. What role does or did he play in your life and your quest?
He is the frame for my judicial philosophy. So I have two individuals who frame my judicial philosophy. At the federal level is Justice Marshall. At the state level is Justice Abrahamson. And, you know, Dr. Ingram, he was so important to me that I went out and paid to have a picture of him painted and put in my courtroom. Because I wanted to, every time I take the bench, I want to be able to see, look over to my left, and think about how Justice Marshall would handle these moments. And so I have another one that I just paid for to get painted with Justice Jackson, and I'm going to put her on the right side of my courtroom so I can have a balance between both of them. So I can remember their philosophy and their commitment to thinking about the law as a vehicle for making our society and the world better. And that's what Justice Marshall, through, you know, his training at Howard and Charles Hamilton Houston, who trained all those lawyers to use the 14th Amendment about equal protection and due process of the law as a vehicle to say the ways in which we have done separate but equal is illegal. How do we make sure that our society is better? And they use the law to make the world better. And I think after we, you know, just saw this tragic murder of Tyre Nichols, it is again a reminder that we must use the law to make the world a better place, because if when we do not, you know, we see the vacuum of pain and anguish and death, you know, fill up that void, and we can no longer, at least our community can no longer handle that kind of pain anymore.
You know, Judge Mitchell, as you travel the state, Wisconsin, one of the most segregated states in all the United States. People may not want to hear that, but it is a fact. As you travel and talk to people in different parts of the state, especially rural parts of the state, who many don't get to see a person of color, how are you able, what kind of discussion and how are you accepted in those areas?
Yeah, I mean, they are so wonderful. I think what I've experienced is going and having the conversation, they respect that. You know, just being able to show up, even if we have disagreements about some of the core issues, the fact that I will show up, engage in a conversation, that I'm not pushing or, you know, I'm not labeling anybody as any kind of extremist or nothing. I take people as human beings that have a way that they see the world, and we can have wonderful conversations. So I can just stop at a bar and, you know, I'm trying to, you know, get onto a Zoom, and I met a wonderful woman named Tina, and she was just so sweet, and we just sat there and talked about politics and life, and she said, I've never voted for a Democrat, probably never will, but I like you, Judge Mitchell. You good. I like that. And it's just bringing that humanity to these conversations that made me be like, okay, all right, so what we're looking for is an engagement, and if we are not there to have the conversation, then the vacuum gets filled up with all kinds of stuff that the media will portray about us. But, I mean, Brother Ingram, they done, you know, people done invited me to their house. They done invited my wife and I to the house. It is a reminder that, you know, let's have the conversation. Let's stop thinking that people are not ready for it, and let's engage them. And when you do engage them, you'll find so much transformative love that maybe we can use that as a foundation to move our state forward in a very different direction.
So, you know, I met you, I don't know, a little over a month ago, maybe a little bit more than that, at an event in the city of Milwaukee called Community Brainstorming. Didn't know you from Adam. Didn't have.
No, you shouldn't.
Didn't know. Hadn't heard about you. And I heard you speak. And I felt your humanity. And all throughout the few minutes that you had to have this dialogue and conversation, I said, wow, this is the kind of person we need on the Supreme Court level. I didn't see you as a black person. I felt your humanity, and you had some ideas that made sense. And the fact that you were able to think outside of the box and not be shackled with process made me want to see if I could get a hold to you. And I am more excited every time I get to hear from you. And I tell people everywhere I go, about you.
Yeah, I think, and that's the thing, Brother Ingram, is that as a judge, I'm not trying to be a partisan judge. I don't sit around and say, you know, what did these Republicans do, the Democrats? I'm saying I need solutions for our community. How do we get there? What do we need to get there? And whether it is fighting for resources for mental health or, you know, using my power for CCAP to you know, use my voice to make sure we change CCAP rules or even taking handcuffs off of babies. Like, that should be our standard in the first place. But it's having those experiences, listening, being willing to listen, because nobody listened to me. And right. So I know how empty it is when you don't get listened to. So I said, as a judge, let me prioritize being a great listener. Because I love what Maya Angelou always said. People may not ever remember what you said, but they always remember how you made them feel.
You know,
if you can make them feel good.
You know, I know you got to run.
I gotta go to court.
Yeah. All right. So we'll be talking soon. That's the Honorable Judge Everett Mitchell. He's a candidate for the state Supreme Court. We'll be back soon, I promise you.
And Brother Ingram, all I'm gonna keep saying for the rest of this month is let's make history in Black history.
Yes, sir. All right. Thank you very much.
Let's make history.
The Honorable Judge Everett Mitchell, who you know is on his way to the bench. I don't know how many, you know, judges would take time out right before they go to the bench to have a conversation and a dialogue. Our phone lines are open at 844-967-2789. Your thoughts about the Honorable Judge Everett Mitchell. Let's go to Jacob. Hey, Jacob, thank you very much for waiting. You say what?
Hey, Earl. Yeah, Judge Mitchell, that interview was outstanding. I mean, I had no idea that you guys had such a quality, high character, intelligent candidate running for the state Supreme Court as Everett Mitchell. That's outstanding.
Well, you know, the problem is going to be with all the money that is going into this campaign, and this is what Tom always talks about, money in politics. He certainly is not going to be anywhere near. He'll probably come in fourth with the amount of money that's going to be spent, but that doesn't mean that he's not the best candidate of all of them. So, you know, we've got to certainly get his name out as often as we can. But I'm sorry, go ahead, Jacob.
Oh, yeah, I agree completely. And, of course, you know, running for judicial office or political office, you know, often you got to lose first before you eventually win. So that's, you know, part of the process.
Yeah,
sometimes.
But we're not looking towards him losing because it's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for us, for people to recontrol a conservative state Supreme Court. So we can't afford to wait until tomorrow. Go ahead.
That's right. And I just want to remind folks out there who have not heard this, I'm not sure why it's not a bigger story in the state of Wisconsin, but the two conservative justices, potential justices running for office, the former Justice Dan Kelly and, of course, Jennifer Doro, they both have their legal educations directly from, guess who? Pat Robertson, okay? Pat Robertson, the scam artist. Pat Robertson, the racist, the far-right extremist. That's where they got their legal education, was from Pat Robertson University, Regent University. Okay, both Doro and Kelly, you know, their whole reason supposedly for being in the legal profession is where they got their law degree. How come they couldn't go to a university other than Pat Robertson's university? Both of them went to the same, you know, scam university. It's basically just the legal equivalent of Trump University.
You know, I will say this. People should keep listening because in the 9 o'clock hour, we are going to have, without question, a tear-jerking conversation dealing with one of the two people you just mentioned about an issue that unfortunately has not been covered as much as it should. And I think it certainly should have an impact on the outcome of the state Supreme Court race. So I'm imploring everyone to tell somebody else about what's the conversation that we're getting ready to have in the 9 o'clock hour that they really need to listen to. Anybody who is planning on voting in the state Supreme Court race needs to listen to this show over the next hour, because when you make the decision on February 21st, Election Day, you should have this information with you as you make that decision. Hey, Jacob, thank you very much for the call. Phone lines are open. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. I'll tell you something. I am just so impressed with Judge Everett Mitchell, a young man who fought his way through hell, who dealt with really tough issues in his life and was able to rise to the highest heights in seeking, you know, one of the highest offices, you know, in the land. When you can become a United States, or a state Supreme Court justice, it really is an amazing story. He's certainly not there. It is a battle, to say the least. Those of us who have been around a little while and who understand what's been happening with the state Supreme Court here in Wisconsin, as well as the United States Supreme Court, know that it's been invaded by conservatives, and the influence and decisions that have been rendered have all been leaning towards, you know, conservative. And so many of those who have been appointed and made it to the Supreme Court have been backed financially by, you know, Republican influence, conservative influence, and have made their decisions based on those things. It's the reason why we are dealing with a fight to even vote anymore in parts of this country, and all of the other things. I mean, listen, here we are in a state of Wisconsin and dealing with, just for an instance, the fact that there are people who know, and there's certainly facts to back up the impact of medical marijuana to many people. Scientists, the science is already in. It works. But we live in a state that we can't even get medical marijuana passed because of conservatives who, for whatever reason, are so obstinate in their views that they really don't care whether people can get what's in their best interest. You know, I mean, what's the point? Well, we don't want medical marijuana because it may lead to, marijuana use. Hey, conservatives, people are going to use marijuana whether or not you say it's legal or not. There's nothing you can do to prevent people from smoking marijuana. As a matter of fact, it's legal in many parts of the country and continuing to grow in states realizing that it is stupidity that you won't make the call and a decision to say people have a right to make those kinds of decisions. They're adults. But no. The conservative views on things, we know what's best for you. We don't want you, you know, using medical marijuana because we think it's going to be a stepping stone to something else. This, from a state that legalizes tobacco, this from a state that legalizes alcohol, and people can drink until, you know, they're blue in the face, or they can smoke, you know, packs and packs of cigarettes that we know are going to kill them. But medical marijuana, no. We need people with vision on the Supreme Court. We need people who don't have those built-in biases. You know, I'm a conservative. So what? Let's do what's right for people. And Judge Everett Mitchell is that kind of a man who is not going to be locked into all of that foolishness. Does he have an uphill battle? Yes, he absolutely does. Because even the Democratic candidate that's running against him has plenty of dollars. And we do know, in many instances, these seats are for sale. It's one of the biggest problems in this nation, is that these seats are for sale. And so that's why it's really important that you listen to the show in the 9 o'clock hour, because we're going to have some revealing information that should impact decisions. My bottom line is, let's do things based on what's right and not do things based on what's wrong, and not do things based on, and I'm not, again, I'm not supporting Judge Mitchell because, you know, he's going to lean liberal. You just heard him speak for himself. I didn't hear anything come out of his mouth that said, you know, I'm going to lean liberal. You know, I'm going to see things from the liberal perspective of things. Didn't say that. But I have heard. I told you, I've been around a while. My hair's not white, and my beard's not white for not having been around a while. I've listened to the renderances from those who are on the right on the state Supreme Court of Wisconsin. I've listened to them many times over and know that the decisions that they make have been influenced by the money and by the fact that the conservative movement made sure, with money and help from major corporations, that they wind up where they are so they can then make decisions that don't affect or impact you and I, but affect and impact business. Let me say this. I'm going to be joined at the top of the hour by Miss Michelle Coleman. Miss Michelle Coleman is the mother of Cade Reddington. Cade Reddington is the young man who died of a fentanyl overdose November 21st of last year. The allegations are that the son of Judge
Jennifer Doro.
Jennifer Doro, who's a candidate for the state Supreme Court. Again, allegations that her son sold him those drugs that cost him his life. Again, Michelle Coleman is the mother. She'll be joining me after the break. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. We'll be right back.